it's nice for me to have him here because he's, to me, one of the last vestiges of the old school integrationists from Rosemead School of Psychology. And that goes back to some of the early psychologists who did connecting with religion and psychology. So you've got that legacy to carry on. And now he's head of pastoral care training at Talbot. And I am happy to introduce him. And we're going to hear some interesting things about training future pastors.
Thank you. It's good to be here. I was at a Halloween party last night with some neighbor friends, and I left early, and why are you leaving early? And I said, well, I'm speaking at a conference around depression and suicide, and nothing was like a mood killer than that. But I think what they wouldn't understand is what it's like to be here with you all, and the energy of this, and the desire to really understand this disorder, this sets of disorders anyways, and how it is that we're treated, how we can help. So I'm thrilled to be here, thrilled that Dr. Fuller invited me, and really great opportunity. A few things, just as we're sort of going along here. By the way, how many of you are in ministry, lay ministry, training to be in ministry? I see a lot of familiar faces from town here, but as a percentage, like, how many of you are involved in ministering to those who are, okay, very good, thank you. You know, we all come to this kind of thing for a lot of reasons, none of them particularly random, so I'm sure when you heard about a conference on depression, you weren't just thinking, wow, that would be really fun to go to that. You're here because you're either trying to help other people, you're trying to help yourself, you're trying to help family members who are struggling with depression, trying to understand this epidemic in some ways and how to respond to it. And I'm appreciative of that, that you're here. Really quickly, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but how did a shrink, right? How did a psychologist become the director of pastoral care and counseling at Talbot School of Theology? And there is a bit of an interesting story there because it's a very convoluted one. It starts out with life, right? So life, which hands you its own bits of struggle and pain. When I was a very much younger man, I had married my high school sweetheart. We had been married for a short number of years. She was 8 months pregnant and died of an amniotic embolism. So her and my son both died at that moment in time. And of course, that was a pretty, as you can imagine, a pretty disorienting experience. And with the grief and the loss, certainly there was some depression in there as well. And I went to see the pastor of my church at the time, and well-meaning guy, right? Really well-meaning guy. But horribly equipped to actually attend to what it was that I was going through. And because of that, I think actually exacerbated struggles that didn't need to be exacerbated. And so it was kind of out of that experience that I sort of realized, I don't know, Lord, what you're going to do with all this, how you're going to redeem all this, but perhaps some aspect of this would be studying mental illness, kind of thinking about how it is to help others, how to redeem my own pain, I suppose, in some ways. And so I attended Rosemead School of Psychology. And as Tom said, when I was there, it was really kind of a different era in many ways than it is now. So when I was attending Rosemead, it was sort of in the heyday of really interesting thinkers talking about how do we bring psychology and theology together. Because historically, those two things had been like oil and water, right? They did not go well together. And there was so much skepticism within the church about psychology, and there was so much skepticism in psychology about the church that these two areas just didn't seem to come together well. So I got to learn under a study under some people who were really giving that a great deal of thought. And it was really a profound experience in my life at the time. I ended up, while I was at Rosemead, getting connected to CIF, which is the Center for Individual and Family Therapy. And did we actually start at 10:30? Because I feel like I'm already way behind, if that's the case. That's been a really kind of instrumental part of my life. Went back to Biola as a professor, teaching in various capacities, teaching Rosemead School of Psychology again, which was really fabulous. A few years ago, I was recruited to come over to Talbot by the Dean of Talbot, which I was reluctant to do in some ways because I had a pretty good gig. And I thought, I'm not sure that I really want to do this. And so Dr. Arnold, who was the Dean of Talbot, he said, "You know, Kevin, come and teach a class for us adjunct and see what you think." And I did that. And just immediately fell in love with the students. It's just been a fabulous experience being able to teach and also learn from these students who are really preparing for ministry. Part of what drove that train as well was Rick and Kay Warren's sons Matthew's death by suicide several years ago, and their encouragement to bring someone into Talbot who had a background in mental health and mental illness to better equip pastors to really understand what it is they're confronting on really a day-to-day basis. And so God redeems. He redeems pain in many ways, and in some very confusing ways, but he does. Before this morning, I was sitting in the back, and I felt like the Lord just sort of put this passage on my heart, and I thought I would share it with you, because it's really when I share it with my students almost the first day of class. Romans 8, 22 through 23, we know that the whole creation has been groaning in labor pains until now. And not only creation, but we ourselves, who are the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly while we wait for adoption and the redemption of our bodies. We are all broken. We're just all broken. I've never given birth. I was there a few times when my wife did, and it really looks horrible. Like everything about it is God bless. I don't even know how you do it. So it just looks horrible. The pain, the groaning, the I'm going to kill you. And I appreciated your pastor's comments in the very beginning of just his own story, his own journey, your journeys, because really we are in this together. And it's through that suffering, it's through those experiences that you really will, I think, minister to others. So at Talbot, what are we trying to accomplish? Well, a few things. One is really attempting to overcome some, Dr. Garvey kind of talked about this, overcoming stereotypes, stigma, shame, which is a big word, and ignorance related to mental illness. So part of my role at Talbot is to help pastors, if they come in with some of these thoughts, to try to overcome some of them, and then to help them really teach their congregants how to overcome this as well. How do we do this? Well, I'm a professor, right? So one of them is academic. classwork, textbooks, readings on things like psychopathology, helping pastors really understand the nature of mental illness. Addiction. I want them to understand addiction because so often when we're talking about depression, addiction is oftentimes sort of a comorbid experience. Addiction and depression oftentimes go hand in hand, so I want them to understand the nature of addiction. Short-term counseling. I'm not teaching pastors how to become therapists. Really, my students probably get sick of hearing this from me, but I really want them to focus on short-term counseling in the church, 5 sessions or fewer, and then really preparing this person maybe for a referral, maybe more than that. The psychology and theology of shame and guilt. I could talk for the whole half hour just about that, because I find what's fascinating to me as Christians, In some ways, we should be carrying the least amount of shame. And yet what I find in my clinical practice, my Christian patients carry so much more shame than my secular patients. My secular patients oftentimes think, I'm bound up by this. And yet my Christian patients oftentimes do. Trauma, some basic knowledge of psychotropic meds, etc. Spiritual, being a Talmud's great. My students all have to participate in spiritual direction. You have to take, I think, you guys can correct me, but several units in spiritual direction. If you know anything about the Institute for Spiritual Formation, which I just adore, they really attempt to go deep into themselves. Coursework in spiritual formation, theology, biblical studies. I find oftentimes in my classes, I'm a professor, but I'm like the least of the theologians in the room. The students really are so fabulous in that area. Some required personal therapy in one of the internships, some kind of counseling experience as well. So what we want them to do is at least get some sense of what it's like to be a counselee rather than a counselor, because it's pretty humbling process in many ways. Exposure to internship experiences in environments that are really going to expose them to mental health issues. A lot of our students do internships in various church care ministries, rescue missions such as Union Rescue Mission downtown LA, LA Mission, Orange County Rescue Mission, Long Beach Rescue Mission. And if you ever want to be immersed in major serious psychopathology, just spend some time at a mission and you're going to see some really extensive aspects of that. Hospitals, through the chaplaincy programs, day programs, the military. Quite a few of my students are former military and really have a goal of ministering either through VA kind of chaplaincy environments or through some parachurch organization that really ministers to the veterans, which is really cool for me to see. University chaplaincy, we're starting a new kind of a beta test this year of using some of our pastoral care and counseling. Well, actually just one, because she's carrying the mantle, so hopefully it all works out well. But she's really participating on as sort of a campus chaplain within the university, and that's been kind of exciting to see what she's doing at Miami. So, addiction and recovery. I require all of my students to attend an AA meeting, which I know for many of them is a little anxiety-provoking in the beginning, but I have found it to be such an effective way for them to break through some of the stereotypes around addiction. Because there's nothing, I historically find my students come back from their experience at AA and tell me, I wish church were more like this. I wish church were more like this. I wish church was a place where people came and felt safe enough to just be incredibly broken. And I'm not trying to idealize AA, like anything, it's pro and con there, right? But what you don't see oftentimes is a lot of hiding. What you see there is sort of this unvarnished, just, I'm a mess. And so that's been a great experience for them to go to. I also, in one of my classes, have them conceptualize how a recovery ministry can be developed in their church ministry, specifically around addiction and recovery. There's sort of almost nothing worse, maybe except for a drunk, than a dry drunk, right? Someone who is sober, but has never done any of the work of healing and of growth. And they may not be drinking, but they're just as miserable and just as uncomfortable and unpleasant to be around. And so what I really want them to see is this notion of what does it look like to go through this kind of recovery. And I love the concept of the church being a place where that happens. So the students really respond to that well. I want them to redefine mental health ministry as a care ministry. And Bob Baker will be coming up, I think, after the lunch hour. He's been coming up after lunch hour, I think, to really talk a lot about what they've been doing at Saddleback, which is wonderful. and how it is that we can begin to think about if conservatively 20% of the people that are sitting in a church on a Sunday morning are struggling with some form of mental illness, and then we're not even talking about family members that are struggling with some form of mental illness, then I think we're being profoundly neglectful if we're not thinking about ministering to that population in a more meaningful way. Now, things have changed a lot over the years. I've been impressed by the fact that churches are really kind of embracing this notion. I don't see a lot of defensiveness around it or resistance. I find there's a lot of willingness to say, we want to do this, we just don't know how to do it. And so I'm really excited about that, very pleased about that. I feel like I'm in class and I should say, do you have any questions? So, because at my core, I'm kind of a statistical geek, because I used to teach stats, and I had to take all those classes in my PhD program, and so I feel like I have to redeem that pain somehow too. So I'll spread that pain to you. So how successful have we been so far? So I've been at Talbot now for a couple, 2-3 years, and I haven't been collecting data all along, but I've been collecting some more recently. And so I've been looking at students who are just entering the program. They're just coming into the first semester. And I asked them a question, basically, prior to beginning this course, how knowledgeable did you feel about common mental health issues? And you can see, you know, it's almost a bell curve there in some ways. And, you know, most of it leans towards not knowledgeable, towards the left. More knowledgeable would be to the right. And then I asked a group of students who, and this was all anonymous, by the way, I asked a group of students who have been in the program for quite a while, but basically the same question. And you notice it's pretty skewed there to the left as well. And statistically, right, how many of you like took stats? Any stats geeks in here? Okay. All right. So statistically, what I found is there's no statistical difference between these two groups, which is good. I mean, because what that means to me is these groups are essentially the same. They both came in not knowing much about mental health. Then I asked them a question about their preparedness to pastorally counsel a depressed congregant. And upon entering the program, you notice that data is pretty skewed to the left as well. So, you know, well over 70% plus really felt like they had no level of preparedness to counsel someone who was suffering with depression. Later in the program, the data definitely skews farther to the right, which I was happy to see. And statistically, that actually is significant, right? So if you remember your little p-value, p is less than 0.00001 on this one, right? This was great data for me personally. And what it means is that my students are feeling more prepared to counsel people who are depressed. I was thrilled with that. Next one was on suicide. How prepared are they to respond to a congregant with suicidal ideation? Again, as you can see, students entering the program pretty far down there, right? Probably 70 to almost 80%. Probably didn't feel prepared at all upon completing nearing completion of the program. Again, we get the data much farther to the right. So I feel like something's going well. Our students are coming out of this program more prepared to counsel people who are having experience or suicidal ideation. The p-value is really low again. And then Dr. Komodo and Dr. Garvey and Dr. Mann, you guys will like this data. Comfortability with congregants using psychotropic medications. They were relatively comfortable with this, even coming into the program, you know, entering the program. But later on, this data looks really good. So we've definitely kind of moved these numbers to the right. And this p-value is really great as well. So statistically speaking, anecdotally speaking, just, you don't even have to be a stats guru to just look at these bar graphs and know something's changing. And I think it's changing for the better. So I think I not only do I feel good about that, but I think you should feel good about that too. Real quickly, this isn't the most important slide here at all, but I wanted to know kind of what their thoughts were about why the church and psychology and therapy have had such a complicated relationship. And they could answer as many questions as they want. The one that always won out, though, for both, this doesn't mean this is what they feel, this is just what they think people in the church feel, which is that the Bible contains all we need to know about responding to mental health relational issues. And I think, if anything, this morning you saw Dr. Garvey's presentation, Dr. Green's presentation, whatnot. What we really know is there is something neurochemically that's going on in people that you know, we're just beginning to really understand in many ways. This is an exciting time of learning about what's not only happening for people psychologically, relationally, but what's going on for people neurochemically as well. So I think we're kind of breaking through a lot of that. Specific responses to mental health needs. So what I'm trying to teach my students at some level is how to respond to these through some kind of pastoral level assessment. So Lifeway Research, their data suggests that about 60 to 70% of people who attend church regularly are going to consult with a pastor prior to seeking out any kind of professional mental health treatment. They're going to come to you first. They're going to come to my students first, and they're going to say, "Pastor, I don't know what's going on, but I'm struggling. And what I really want is a future generation of pastors to be attentive to that notion of, well, then, what kinds of questions do I need to ask here, right? How do I assess this in a meaningful way?" So we talk about sort of categories of potential mental illness. So we have we talk about various forms of psychopathology, not just depression and suicide, but anxiety, eating disorders, sexual addiction, more generally, major mental illness, more psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, these kinds of things. Really trying to, again, not turn them into psychologists or therapists, but to just, as they're sitting with someone, that they have some kind of radar that they're assessing these various symptoms in a way that's at least helping them understand some broad category of what may be going on. We also want them to be able to better assess severity. How severe are these symptoms? So on a scale of 1 to 10, someone comes in, you kind of get the vibe that they're depressed. How do you start asking questions to assess the severity of that depression? And you guys have sort of heard some of those already today. The potential for self-harm. How do you ask nicely if someone's thinking about killing themselves? Well, I don't know. There's no nice way. There's gentle ways to do that. And help them break through their fear that if they ask about it, that the person is more likely to act upon it. And in fact, the data suggests just the opposite. Asking about someone's potential to want to harm themselves is not going to increase the tendency for them to want to harm themselves. It actually sort of takes a little steam pressure out of that because they feel like someone's actually listening to them and hearing what they're experiencing. Referral versus church or ministry level care. And depending on all these things that we're talking about here, I want my students to pretty quickly assess, is this someone who really needs professional help? And we talk a fair amount about this. For some of you in the room, we haven't actually talked about that yet, but we will. But what I do want them to do is be able to understand, does this person need some professional help? Are they kind of, again, are they tuning in a radar that tells them, I need to find help, a psychiatrist referral, a psychologist referral, whatnot? Or is this someone who would really benefit from some kind of church or ministry level care? Is this a person who really, yeah, they're down, but they're not clinically depressed, and maybe they just need grief share because maybe someone in their family just passed away and they're working through the process of grief. Maybe Celebrate Recovery would be a great adjunct to whatever it is that they're kind of experiencing or going through. Maybe they need to go to AA. Maybe they need these kinds of things. So it's really just, again, help my students kind of understand what's in front of me, what do I do with what it is they're presenting. And then kind of triaging. And that is just stabilizing the scenario in some way. That might mean basic crisis management. If you're working with youth, that might mean bringing in the parents, or at least notifying the parents of what's going on, but how do they attend to this person in a way that at least takes the temperature down a bit and doesn't turn it up, right? Because what I'm wanting to do is help to bring some stabilization to somebody who's presenting some more complex phenomena. Resourcing them, that's kind of been talked about quite a bit already, what might resourcing look like, community resources, church resources, if they're available and whatnot. And then what does it look like to continue to walk alongside and disciple someone who's struggling with a mental illness? So taking the pressure off a typical pastor, you don't have to counsel them for the next 4 years, right? Because you're not equipped to counsel them for the next 4 years, because what they really need is Dr. Garvey and Carla, wherever Carla went, right? That's who the person really needs. However, you as a pastor are not finished, right? What does it look like to really be mindful? This person needs to be discipled. This person needs a pastor that can kind of speak into these other parts of their life that are, we're not just the body, and we're not just the mind, we're the spirit too. What does it look like to really own that role without feeling like you have to be their therapist? And huge believer in that. And then mental health-oriented care ministries. One of the things I talk about with my students, and I'm sure Bob will talk about this later, is what does it look like to develop these kinds of ministries within your church? And I'm reluctant to say that like MOPS is a mental health care ministry, but I think MOPS is a mental health care ministry. I think it is. I think it connects mothers with other mothers and mentoring mothers, and the mom might be depressed, and the mom might be isolated and anxious and overwhelmed, and it's a place where they can be real and be ministered to. And so there are lots of forms of what I would think of as mental health-oriented care ministries that you may not necessarily think about as those kinds of care ministries. And then kind of some ongoing resources. I work with the Center for Individual and Family Therapy. I've been with them for, 20, almost 25 years. And if you know anything about SIFT, we're a large Christian counseling organization in Orange County. We have 4 offices spread throughout Orange County. We work like 65 therapists now. And one of the reasons I've stayed with SIFT for all these years is because foundationally, one of their key values is to be a resource for and as a resource for the local church, we put on at least 2 to 3 pastors' forums / trainings a year. And I encourage my students while they're in the program to attend some of those because they're really good. And then secondly, because if they're going to stay in this general area, it will continue to expose them and develop them to some things from everything we've done recently. There's an upcoming conference, on the SIFT website, but there's an upcoming, I think it's on a Wednesday, about 6 hours, on trauma, which I expect to be really good. We did one on sexual addiction recently, self-care for pastors. So really helping pastors kind of understand you can continue to grow in this area. Seminary might be over, but there are things that you can do to continue. Mental health first aid training. How many of you are familiar with mental health first aid? Yeah, a handful of you. A few years ago, we had the director of the Bio Counseling Center coming to do this for some of my students. And it was so helpful that I think what we're going to do is get someone sort of in our department trained on mental health first aid so they can do this so that more students can get access to it. You haven't had a chance to attend a mental health first aid workshop. It's like an 8-hour deal. It's not that expensive. It's really good, just found kind of just fundamental information on what to do with someone who's really struggling with a mental health issue. Emphasis on continued professional growth, such as this conference, right? I mean, things like this are happening. We live in LA. If we're going to live with 10 million other people all on top of each other, we may as well take advantage of all these opportunities that present themselves here, right? Spiritual direction through the Institute for Spiritual Formation. I'm just such a big believer in not only just knowing self, but understanding what it is the Spirit's doing in your life and in your heart. And for pastors, I've just worked with so many pastors in therapy over the years. And it's a tough job. It's kind of a thankless job in many ways too. And they just burn out and they just get dry inside. And the idea of continuing to kind of attend to their heart in a meaningful way, yeah, this is a great way to do that. And then the publication of a new textbook, which I'm excited about. In fact, Dr. Okamoto wrote the chapter on psychopharmacology and for what pastors need to understand about psychopharmacology. That'll be published in the spring. It's been a labor of, well, maybe I do know what it's like to give birth. It's felt like, it's felt like, now I should, okay, don't beat me up. But it has been both really exciting and really painful at the same time, but we're almost there. Publishers, it's going to copy editing, and it's going to be out next year, so we're excited about that. And it's a textbook written specifically to seminarians relative to mental health, and I'm really optimistic about that. And then we're in the process of sort of planning for alumni training opportunities as well, so Talbot will have some programs in place for alumni that are either free or very inexpensive that they can continue to do growth. Some of that might be on